You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Hi there, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the racing world every weekday. It is Friday, November the 20th, and as I look out across Bahrain Bay, I can tell you that today is the most significant day in the racing history of this kingdom, because it is the second incarnation and the most valuable incarnation of the Bahrain International Trophy. You'll be able to see it on television in Australia, America, England, and indeed in 123 other nations around the world. And just how important is this event, and indeed next week's Bahrain Grand Prix, to this kingdom? Well, you'll find out in a few moments with His Excellency Roddy Drummond, who's the United Kingdom's ambassador to Bahrain. What else is coming up on the show? Well, I will be talking to Dermot Weld, the man who trains the Breeders' Cup Turf heroine Tarnawa, who features at number 4 in James Willoughby's list of the Thoroughbred Global Rankings racehorses of the world. I'll be talking to James and to Dermot. I'll also be talking to Will Woodhams, the CEO of our partners at Fitzdares, who are producing a brand new film commemorating not just Frankel, but the man who trained him, Sir Henry Cecil, as part of a brand new series honouring great sportsmen of the past. But first of all, we're going to check in with Lee Mottishead, the senior writer of the Racing Post, for a bulletin of what's going on back home in the UK and Ireland. And Lee, as we flagged up on the podcast yesterday, significant news of a loan, it must be stressed, importantly, a loan, not a grant or a handout from the government, to the tune of £40 million as part of their COVID winter rescue package for sport. And that is going to be dedicated to horse racing.
Yeah, absolutely. So that is crucial. These aren't handouts. Some of the £300 million the government is distributing across sport is in the form of grants, but not to racing. The money will go to race courses. The direction seems to be that they should only be applied for in exceptional circumstances. But the fact that the government has handed £40 million or allocated £40 million to racing would suggest that the BHA and RCA have lobbied that sort of sum is needed in these exceptional circumstances. So I think racecourses will largely welcome it. But as I say, this isn't absolutely a handout. It will only really tide racecourses over this period of time when we expect no spectators to continue to be allowed on racecourses.
How do you imagine racing stakeholders, other stakeholders, non-racecourses, are going to react to this?
Well, that's a very, very good question. And in the early reaction from stakeholders, there have been hints of that. I think the reaction from Charlie Liverton, chief exec of the ROA, very much hinted that he wants to be sure that a lot of this money, he used the phrase, will trickle down to the committed participants that keep racing going. And he added there's more to do to address structural funding issues. So I think while horsemen will accept, because they can't do anything about it, that this money is to racecourses, because it's been distributed to sports governing bodies, etc., where spectators, well, the lack of spectators is causing problems, they will absolutely feel, I think, that they are deserving of a chunk of this money. And I'm sure they'll be closely monitoring prize money levels from those racecourses that receive the cash.
Do you think racing will feel vindicated that it has been in tandem with other sports in the negotiation process?
Yeah, I think they will. And I think certainly if you look at the reaction from racecourses, they have been praising not only the RCA but also the BHA. And I think it is testament, I think, to the effective work that the BHA's public affairs team has done on this issue. And I think on previous issues too, while some in the sport question how talented the people within High Holborn are at liaising with Westminster and Whitehall, I think you can use this and previous cases to show that they actually do have very good relations across the political world. And I think they will see this as a success. There are, of course, people in racing, including horsemen, who question whether racing should be receiving this sort of money and would much rather that racing was focusing purely on reform of the levy to move towards a turnover-based model. BHA and Racing would say they actually are doing that at the same time as this as well.
And much more from Lee about what's happening on the track in Britain and Ireland in just a few minutes' time. But as I said at the top of the show, this fixture today in Bahrain, where I've been based all week, is pretty significant, as indeed is the Formula One Grand Prix, which takes place next week. I've been talking to the UK ambassador to the Kingdom of Bahrain, His Excellency Roddy Drummond, and I began by asking him what this sporting portfolio might mean over the next couple of weeks.
So I think, you know, it's been a very long summer here, and like everywhere in the world, everyone's been closed down, constrained by COVID. So there's great excitement that we're getting back into events, and you know, the sporting calendar is filling up again with the equestrian calendar, and then the Grand Prix is coming twice to Bahrain before the end of the year. And so, you know, it is an exciting time, you know, and a lot to look forward to as well next year. But I recall very well the excitement last year with the first international equestrian event, and we're really looking forward to seeing it back, although we'll be, like everybody else, watching it on television.
Absolutely, because it will be, as so many global sporting events are at the moment, behind closed doors. How has the Kingdom as a whole managed the pandemic?
Really well. I mean, it's the same challenge that we've all had, and every country has its own specificities, but they've managed to keep it under control. They've managed in the last few months to really push it down to a very low level. We're very pleased in the UK. We've been able to take Bahrain off the quarantine list, so any visitors to Bahrain don't have to do quarantine when they go back to the UK. And we've stopped advising against all but essential travel to Bahrain, and that's a sign of our confidence that they've pushed it down, and they're going to be able to keep it down for quite a while. So that, I hope, we'll see more visitors coming in and out. British Airways are coming back with some more flights. Gulf Air are raising the number of flights. So, you know, but the medical facilities here are second to none, and they're managing the small number of cases they have, and they're keeping up the pressure on the virus and pushing it down. So it's a remarkable effort led by His Royal Highness the Crown Prince.
Friday's race gives the nation the opportunity to showcase what it can do in terms of international horse racing. I know this is something very close to the heart of a significant portion of the ruling family who really want to push racing to the next level and enable this kingdom to compete alongside some of the larger racing nations.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of healthy rivalry as well between different members of the Al Khalifa family and other families here. Some of the merchant families are also very into their racing, and that's all very healthy for the future development of the sport here. And I know they've been very keen to get more of an international flavour to some of the races here, and that's what this initiative does. And yeah, it's very exciting. It was a really good event last year, and we're looking forward to more this year.
Obviously, you've got the Grand Prix, as you mentioned, the following week, and that's obviously a bit more well established here in the Kingdom. Tell me what that's done for the not only the local economy, but for the standing of Bahrain within the Gulf.
So I think they were the first, of course, in the Gulf to have a Grand Prix. The circuit here has a special place, I think, in the heart of the racing teams for that reason. And they've shown what you can achieve in terms of the standard, you know, the incredibly high quality that you have to put on around an event and the track itself and so on to meet the standards of Formula One. So it's firmly established in the calendar. They've been very happy this year to put on a second event to help support Formula One. And I know they're looking forward to getting back into the regular schedule next year. Bahrain's investment in McLaren, of course, a famous racing name, is something to conjure with, and something that's really important both for the racing side, but also for McLaren Automotive and all the engineering that goes along with that. So it's done a lot, I think, in terms of making people aware of what Bahrain has to offer and how Bahrain engages, you know, both economically and commercially, as well as in sporting terms, with the United Kingdom and with the world.
So there's a possibility that that could be readily transposed to horse racing if this becomes more than just a one-off event, if it becomes more of a carnival-style winter akin to what we see in Dubai and a little bit in Abu Dhabi and now building in Saudi Arabia as well.
Exactly, because Bahrain has the ability and has shown it can do, you know, the sort of festival kind of backdrop to sporting events with music and, you know, getting people together in really high quality events, which are great fun for all the spectators. You know, it's a, let's hope we get back to that post-COVID as soon as possible.
Fingers crossed. Thank you so much for talking to me and best of luck for the next couple of weeks.
And to you, stay safe and stay kind. Thank you.
So my thanks to Roddy Drummond, and we are very much looking forward to the second running of the Bahrain International, which takes place today, and you'll be able to see it from 1 p.m. on Racing TV and Sky Sports Racing, and you might even get a glimpse of it on ITV as well. If you're in America, it'll be on Fox Sports 2, and in Australia, on racing.com. Lee Mottishead is back with me to talk about matters a little closer to home, but we're heading to Ireland first, Lee, and the race at Thurles that Jane Mangan was talking about yesterday and building up. Well, it was a bit one-sided in the end, presenting Percy right back in the game.
Yeah, he absolutely dotted up, Nick. I mean, here's a horse who has got a real story, hasn't he, having moved yards from Pat Kelly to Gordon Elliott. He's a horse who has, I think, at one point had real aspirations of winning a Cheltenham Gold Cup, but he's disappointed twice in the race, albeit he fell last year when not completely beaten. This was his first win since January 2019, and it was a big win too. Second start for Gordon Elliott. He travelled beautifully under Jack Kennedy, jumped really well too for a wide margin defeat of Ken Boy, who was in turn a fair way clear of Mona Lee. And I think for the Presenting Percy fan club, and that has quite a lot of members, I think they'll have been delighted. It gives hope that the horse could potentially be third time lucky in a Cheltenham Gold Cup, or perhaps more likely mount a real challenge in the Grand National, because I think for a lot of people he does look now like a proper entry contender.
And it's interesting, I spoke to Gordon Elliott a few weeks ago and I said, on the back of the Down Royal runs of Delta Work and Presenting Percy, who do you think will be shorter in the betting when it comes to Gold Cup Day itself? And he still quite very confidently said Delta Work.
Yeah, and I think the admiration they have for that horse is clear. And I think of those Gordon Elliott, if you like, Gold Cup horses, he probably still looks the more likely one for the Cheltenham Gold Cup. I think you can look at a lot of them and identify realistic alternative targets. But if Delta Work is to have a big day this season outside of races at Leopardstown, I think the Cheltenham Gold Cup is the most likely one for him. Whereas I think Presenting Percy, in all probability, is likely still a few pounds below the absolute very best. Whereas at Aintree, certainly by the way he jumped around Thurles, I think he'd be really interesting.
Now, when somebody said to me today, have you heard about this scandal in Bushy Park, I just assumed that it was nefarious goings on my doorstep in TW11, Lee, but not a bit of it. It's a horse of this name, Bushy Park. Tell me about this.
This happened around the Princess Diana fountain, Nick, in Bushy Park.
Apart from Martin Bashir lurking there, I presume.
Well, apparently, yeah. So Bushy Park is a horse who you would be entitled to have never heard of until the last 24 hours. He's trained by Philip Kirby, and he's also listed as being owned by Philip Kirby as well. And if that's the case, then Philip Kirby is no doubt quite a bit richer today, because this horse was back from 16-1 to 7-4 to win a race at Hexham on Thursday, a pretty lowly handicap hurdle. But when you consider that in his previous runs for Philip Kirby, he'd started at 14-1, 20-1, 125-1, and 28-1, been beaten 36 lengths, 74 lengths, 65 lengths, and 21 lengths. It wasn't obvious, even with a different sort of noseband and softer ground, why he should be such a well-backed horse, but he was. He cruised around, he won by 11 lengths. And just again comparing figures, Nick, his previous RPRs, that's Racing Post ratings, have been 83, 45, 62 and 74. On this occasion, he won off, he posted a mark of 105. So a transformed Bushy Park, and very luckily it came on the day when there was a monumental plunge behind him.
Now, it was announced this week that FitzDares, who support this podcast, are presenting their new Honour series of short documentaries, and they launched with a tribute to the late Sir Henry Cecil, and it's been voiced by the BAFTA and Olivier award-winning actor Toby Jones. So on Saturday during the Jumps meeting, FitzDares will launch this, and we are very much looking forward to it. Will Woodhams, the chief executive of FitzDares, joins me now. Will, just tell me a little bit about this project, because it's got an unusual and lovely story to it.
Well, it was a case of we had a poll in the company and across some of our members of our favourite icons of sport in general, and it wasn't a surprise really that Sir Henry came up top, definitely amongst our team and against a large proportion of our members. So we just wanted to do something to honour him and to remind everyone of what an incredible career he had. So we have made a small documentary and an accompanying advert that honours him. It's as simple as that. And this is a project that we're going to be rolling out with other sports stars. But what a perfect person to start with.
And why did you choose Toby Jones? That's a great coup, great actor to get.
Well, it was between Mark Strong and Toby Jones, and Mark Strong's been doing the government's pandemic adverts, so we thought it might be a bit stern. I mean, Toby was our first choice, and he's just got such a wonderful voice, and he obviously knew who Sir Henry was and loved him. And it's worked brilliantly working with him.
It would be fair to say this is not exactly your typical bookmaker marketing initiative. Is that deliberate?
I'm on the record as saying I'm not a massive fan of bookmakers' adverts as a whole. And I think that, you know, there's government legislation en route which will hopefully put an end to some of the more bet now and sort of teasing adverts to drive you to bet. It's our role as bookmakers to support racing. There'd be no bookmakers without horse racing. So it's absolutely key that we support, you know, our business, our product. And I think we felt like rather than, you know, and of course, sponsorship of races is one of those things. But actually honouring the wonderful and telling the tales and narratives from racing is absolutely key. And I do hope moving forward, bookmakers start to move into this sort of genre of celebrating how wonderful racing is rather than just trying to drive you to have a bet.
Do you think that is happening? Do you think this might be a trend that's followed?
Well, I hope so, because I think where we're at the moment isn't right, and I think the culture around bet now isn't strong, and I don't think it does the bookmakers any good. I think celebrating and enhancing and supporting racing is absolutely a key if we want to, you know, be a partner to racing moving forward.
So the documentary will screen at Ascot today.
Yeah, so yes, it will. So there'll be 40 seconds across Sky Racing and then on our website, which will be fitstairs.com/Henry and on the Ascot microsite on At The Races, we'll show the documentary. But yeah, it's worth a watch. It's really entertaining and it reminds you of what an incredible, topsy-turvy, brilliant and enchanting story that is the Sir Henry Cecil story.
Will Woodhams there. Now it is time for the weekly top 10 in the Thoroughbred Racing Commentary Global Rankings. And before we hear from James Willoughby, let's give you the rundown. At 10, Monomoy Girl. She stays in training, perhaps, with a bid for the Saudi Cup on the line. At 9, Authentic is off to stud. 8, Love. We think we'll see her again next year. Have you forgotten about her? 7 is the retired art winner, Sotsass. He's limbering up for stud duties at Coolmore. 6 is Magical. We think she'll be retired. 5 is Almond Eye, TBD on that one. 4 is Tarnawa, the biggest mover. 3 is Gayath, off to stud at Darley. 2 is Enable, relaxing at Judmont ahead of a date with Kingman. And number 1, the Japanese star, Contrail. So before we hear from James, let's hear from the man who trains the filly that could yet be at the top of this list in 12 months time, because she's staying in training and she's got some big, big targets. Dermot Weld trains Tarnawa, and I've been speaking to him about that memorable Breeders' Cup and about what the plans might be for 2021.
Yes, I think it's excellent news for racing. We look forward to her for again the second part of the year, and developer hopefully to win more Group 1 races.
It's quite unusual for His Highness the Aga Khan to keep horses in training at 5. Did you always imagine it was a possibility?
Well, I think it was just a possibility and no more, but I think she earned it. I think her consistency, I think her record speaks for itself.
Just tell me about how you went through the evening leading up to her victory in the Breeders' Cup Turf. An unusual experience for you insofar as you were at home and you couldn't be there. Was it a bit frustrating not being able to be on hand?
No, I don't think so. It was exciting. I had great confidence in my team. Mark Weld was there. Dean Sinnott, who takes care of the filly when she's travelling, was with her. My feedbacks every day were all very positive. You know, she jumped out of stalls there as well. We were just very, very confident that she was going to give a very good account of herself.
And was that because you felt that she was just taking big steps forward with each run through the season?
She's a very tough, genuine filly. She came back in great order from Giltown, probably July. This was always the plan. My plan had always been to train her for the autumn, and it would be again for next year. And we'd spaced out her races nicely, about 3 weeks apart, and she performed extremely well, as we know. And she was in great order. Everything was right. And I was, as I said, very positive, very confident that with average luck, which you must have, that she would give a huge account of herself.
Interestingly, she's won a Group 1 over a mile and a quarter on, well, what was borderline unraceable ground. And then she's won a Group 1 against males over a mile and a half on pretty quick ground. What do you think is her absolute optimum?
It's very hard to say because she is so effective at Group 1 level against the best horses in the world over both distances. So I don't think it'd be right for me to say, oh, that is her extreme optimum distance. She certainly gets a mile and a half very well, and I suppose a mile and a half is her optimum distance because she can carry that great speed she has over a mile and a half.
Obviously, you've always held her in high regard. After all, she ran in the Oaks as a three-year-old. But at what point in her career do you think, hang on, I might actually have a bit of a champion on my hands here?
I think she progressed from 2 to 3 and again from 3 to 4. When she won the Group 2 Blandford for me last year, the car, I thought she was very impressive that day. Mm. And I said it was on that I convinced His Highness to train her as a four-year-old.
And it's interesting, it seems to me interesting that so many of these good horses around the world at the moment are fillies or mares, getting that allowance obviously, but trainers seem quite content to keep them going, keep them in training, and owners likewise. I mean, do you read anything into that, or do you think it's just a happy coincidence?
I think it's probably a coincidence. I can't be sure why more fillies are being kept in training. As I said, the main reason with Tarnawa is that she showed us towards the end of her three-year-old career that she was progressing rapidly, that she was in great form. And the key, I think, she hadn't been over-raced.
So looking to next season, Dermot, I mean, the exciting thing about having a mare in training is that there are so many more options opened up to you. How would you like to plot your way through the campaign?
Well, we haven't decided yet. It's something that we'll sit down and plan. As I said, the first decision was only made in the past couple of days that she would be kept in training next year as a five-year-old. So it'd be wrong for me to say these are the races she's going to run in, because we'll sit down and go through it with Pat Downs, the manager for His Highness in Ireland, and we look at her, what we have. We have a fair idea where the main races we want to go to, but then we'd plan it out and look at the time difference between races.
And I don't think I'd be saying anything untoward by suggesting that going to the Ark and another Breeders' Cup Turf would be the two primary objectives.
Definitely the Ark would have to be high up on the agenda, and definitely, as I said, I would only plan to run it 3 or 4 times, but they were the main races that we would hope to challenge for, yes.
And obviously you had your little drama with the jockey situation and not being able to use Christoph, but Colin Keane did a super job on her. Would you anticipate jumping one way or the other next season?
Again, that's a very good question, but it's too far away because we don't know. Colin rode an excellent race on her, but so did Christoph, you know, when he won the 2 Group 1s in France on her. The reason I went for Colin is that he's a very talented young rider, riding with extreme confidence. And she's a filly that likes to take her time in the early part of a race. And she likes to get what I call into a rhythm. And she doesn't like being rushed. But once you get her into that rhythm, as you saw in the Breeders' Cup turf, she comes home to some tune. And I just thought Colin rides those sort of horses very well.
Dermot, you've won American Classics, or 1990. You won the Melbourne Cup twice. You've won just about every other big race in the world. In terms of a level of personal satisfaction, where did this one sit?
Right up there. I'd say right up with the Belmont. It was just a race. I really wanted to win a major race at the Breeders' Cup. That's not always possible. We train a smaller team of horses than most of the opposition, so the likelihood of getting horses that are going to win at these major events is challenging. So when you get the opportunity, you have to take it.
Dermot, thanks so much for talking to me.
Thank you, Nick.
So my thanks to Dermot Weld, and it is very exciting, as we said on this segment of the show last week, to keep Tanawa in training. And as we touched upon, we have got quite a lot of fillies staying in training as well, as I referenced in the interview there with Dermot. James Willoughby is with me. James, your reaction to that and to Tanawa as a whole?
Yeah, I just want to say, Nick, that as a racing fan, first and foremost, what great news this really is. We've had a few disappointments of late with the premature retirement of some horses and other horses perhaps not taking part in races they could have done. And this is one of the really exciting horses. It takes me back to my youth, dare I say, even the middle distance horse that can quicken like a Mustang. There's nothing more exciting than that. And may I say as well that, with all due respect to other trainers, to have a horse like this in the hands of a trainer who's widely regarded throughout the world has been masterful in what he does. In other words, he's the thinking man's trainer. He places his horses with foresight. Typical of him was the interview you just had, in that he answered the question so precisely, so fairly, and it's just tremendous news, and I'm sure racing fans throughout the world will appreciate that with every step Tanawa takes next season.
So is there a possibility that she ends up three places higher this time next year? Could she end up dominating these rankings, do you think?
Well, I hope so, very much so. I think she's got the tools, as Dermot laid out there. She has this ability to work her way into a race and then to overwhelm her rivals with a turn of foot that no middle distance horse on the planet can match. And what was exciting, of course, about her winning the Breeders' Cup turf is, because we have sectionals on a flat track, on fast ground, we're able to measure how quick she came home. And this leads to a very important and rather technical point about Tanawa, which is she's liable to be rated, unless some juggling goes on, she's liable to be rated around 119 on the world's best racehorse rating scale. And of course, topping that particular scale is Gayath, who has a very different run style to her. And this opens a whole panoply of questions about the way that ratings come about and are achieved, which in Europe we've been obsessed with during the modern era. Because Gayath rated 130 would mean that if there were a handicap race between the two, which of course there won't be, Gayath would be conceding £11 or thereabouts to Tanawa. And I think that the test of ratings, really, is that if two horses ran in a mythical handicap, how would the betting public feel if they were offered even money the pair? And rather than being ambivalent, which is the test of two ratings that were actually spot on, in this case, I suspect it would be 95-5 in Tanawa's favour. Now, it's not through handicapping error this situation comes about. It's because of the mechanics of handicapping are out of date. We have sectional times now. We understand that to win a race like Tanawa did the Breeders' Cup requires a horse to not just be a pound or two superior to the second horse, who in this case, of course, was Magical, but on the day to be £10 to £12 superior. Now, Magical wasn't at her previous best, but it's Channel Maker, the American horse who made the running at a slow pace, who holds the form of the race down. If you look at it on a who beat whom and by how far basis, which is the methodology used by the handicappers. But if you allow for what I've just said, if you expand the finish of the race and say, how good do these horses have to be to do what they do, then you're left with being able to calculate that Tanawa has to be a massively superior horse to the result. And that's what we might see next year, all being well, in races like the Ark.
And you've talked a lot about a body of work as well. So you add to her Breeders' Cup her victory in the Prix de l'Opera. Now, this is of no little significance as regards her ranking points in your list, is it?
Absolutely spot on. I took apart her ranking after our chat last week to see why the justification for why we had her so highly rated in fourth in the world. And I found that the bulk of her ranking score came from this remarkable renewal of the Prix de l'Opera on the 4th of October at Longchamp, of course, Arc Day. And in that, she beat Alpine Star, Audaya, Tall Keel, and Ambition. And even the seventh horse has run at one of Group 3 since. And of course, if you look through their form, Alpine Star, of course, was a brilliant winner of the Coronation Stakes. Audaya has got tremendous form. She went on, of course, to win a group the year filling their turf. Tall Keel is the most highly regarded horse in Jean-Claude Rouget's stable. I'm sure will do great things herself next year. And Ambition, well, she was second to Audaya the time before at Deauville in a group one. She's by Dubawi out of talent. So this is one of those races that these form lines that Frankel used to produce, where you look through Frankel's form and you found that everything Frankel had beaten had absolutely thrashed everything else when he wasn't around. This is basically what makes form strong and reliable. And from a technical point of view, while the Breeders' Cup turf was brilliant to watch, this race is brilliant to read, the Prix de l'Opera. It really is a fantastically strong piece of form.
And finally, James, we touched on it last week, but the amount of fillies that could stay in training to completely dominate the world next year. We've talked a lot about Tanawa in at 4 in your list, Almond Eye to be decided at 5. We assume Magical's off to stud, but I don't think that's been made official at 6. Love at 8 will carry on, we think, and Monomoy Girl will certainly carry on.
Well, we've seen this now for a number of years, and smart form analysts around the world have caught on to it. And this is the record of female horses, both on dirt and turf, against males in open competition. And the reason why they're racking up this record, I personally don't think this is a coincidence that Connections are keeping these horses to 4 and 5, as we saw with Enable, is that the allowance that they receive, the £3 to £5 it can be in some races below Group 1 level, is a huge advantage. Because if you lined every horse up in a mythical race at Group 1 level, there wouldn't be a lot to separate them right at the top of the tree. And £3 to £5 is between a length to 2 lengths advantage. And it tips the scales time and time again for these female runners. And that's why we've seen so many of them run. And it's all right with me if they're as good as Tanawa, but I really think technically it should be a level playing field. I don't really see the need for a sex allowance at Group 1 level. Group 2, Group 3 listed, fine. That's a whole different argument. But at Group 1 level, I think we'll continue to see fillies and mares beating male horses for a number of years to come.
Well, thank you to all my guests today on this somewhat extended show, but hopefully give you something for the weekend, as Lee Mottershead might or might even give you something for this afternoon. I'm not sure.
I'm going to give you one for two, actually, for Saturday, Nick. And one is a horse who's in two races on Saturday. He won't win both of them. He's a horse called Highland Hunter, trained by Paul Nichols. He's in the big handicap hurdle at Haydock, the 3-miler. And if he gets in that, grand. But I'd much rather he ran in a novice handicap chase, 12:55 at Ascot. If he does, I think he'd have a cracking chance in that one. And I also think that Paul will be winning the big steeplechase at Ascot, the Chanel Farmer 1965 chase, with a horse called Real Steel, a horse he's gained from Willie Mullins. And having done Paul's stable tour in the Racing Post this week, I think a few quid on Real Steel for the Ryanair chase might well be in order as well. So Real Steel and Highland Hunter at Ascot on Saturday.
Well, we're going to go down together on Real Steel. Lee, thank you very much for your company today. Thank you for listening as well. That was Friday. We will see you after the weekend. Have a good one. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.